Welcome back to another episode of Employment Law Problems, where I, Brett Hollebeck, your host, will be guiding you through some of the most practical employment law and labor law issues that employers, human resource representatives, managers, and other professionals face within the workplace. In this episode, I'll be talking about OSHA's new emergency standard for COVID-19. So it's been, you know, a year and a half, who knows how long. It feels like it's been a never-ending saga with this COVID-19 pandemic. I'm pretty sure all of us have lost track of time, but finally, OSHA has released an emergency standard for healthcare workplaces, and I'll get into what that means in a minute, to help them work through some of the problems facing them within the pandemic. And, you know, I'll go through that standard. I'm going to walk you through some of the main parts of it. I'm going to read out and just highlight the areas that are most important to those healthcare professionals and healthcare workplaces. And OSHA also released some temporary guidance related to the pandemic that really just tracks the CDC guidelines, which I'll be going through as well. So with that, I hope you enjoy this episode. Welcome to the very first part of this episode. In this episode, I'm going to do something a little bit different. So as I said before, I'm basically going to be reading and explaining parts of the rule, some elements that they have, what OSHA has on their website, and highlighting the most important parts for, you know, various workplaces. Now, I do want to talk mostly about COVID-19 emergency standard that OSHA issued for healthcare workplaces. But before I get into that, in this very first part, I just want to briefly go through OSHA's new guidance on mitigating and preventing the spread of COVID-19 in the workplace. So the guidance was, you know, updated, and there were some changes earlier in June, around June 10th. And so basically what OSHA decided to do was to instruct everyone to follow the guidance from CDC. And so CDC has now suggested that employees that are fully vaccinated but still at risk due to some immunocompromising condition may need to discuss the need for additional protections with their healthcare providers. But for everybody else, at most workplaces, there are some exceptions. But in most circumstances, fully vaccinated people need not take all the precautions that unvaccinated people take. They can walk around and engage in activities without masks, without physically distancing from other people. You know, we've all been hearing about the 6-foot rule for about 18 months. Maybe we'll hear about it for 18 more. I don't really know. But it seems like this pandemic, you know, is starting to subside a little bit, at least with in terms of the guidance put out by OSHA and their concerns and some of the ways that, you know, we are now able to interact with each other that we haven't been able to, you know, before the vaccines came out. So there are a couple exceptions to that rule where employees can now be unmasked if they're vaccinated. If there is a federal, state, local, tribal, territorial, or other regulations, or even, you know, workplace rules, that employers should follow those in lieu of this, you know, guidance from OSHA. And it is only just guidance. It's not necessarily a law. And so you should do the best that you can do in your workplace to protect your workers. And that may be that you require workers to wear masks, even if they're vaccinated. And, you know, since we've been hearing a little bit in the news, those of you that maybe have been following the news, maybe you've heard about the Delta variant. You know, there's some big news Friday, June 25th, about the Delta variant. Israel is now, you know, rescinded and walked back from some of its workplace regulations. Some of its regulations regarding mask use due to the Delta variant. There were some employers, there was a workplace where I think half of the adults that have gotten sick from the Delta variant were adults that had been vaccinated. So, you know, the Delta variant is something that is really something, unfortunately, that can set us all back, you know, very, very quickly. So we're going to see what happens with that Delta variant. We're going to see if, you know, OSHA is going to change some of this guidance. You know, the vaccine, and I don't want to, you know, I don't want to be fear mongering. So the vaccines, a lot of them are, you know, I think the Pfizer vaccine is 90% effective at preventing the Delta variant. So, you know, the vaccines are very good. They do protect against these variants, and most people in Israel have been vaccinated. So it's not terribly concerning that half of the people, I think something like 60-70% of the people in Israel have been vaccinated. You know, it's not terribly concerning. The results so far, everything's been preliminary, but it's something that we might be hearing more about. The Delta variant is supposed to be the variant that will be the dominant variant. And it is more contagious, and it is something that we're going to be reading and learning more about because it is very, very new. And unfortunately, it's just a new wrinkle in this whole COVID-19 pandemic. So we're going to see what happens. But for now, OSHA's current guidance allows employers that have been employees that have been vaccinated, employers with vaccinated employees, to allow them to walk around on masks and to, you know, not have to socially distance. Now, OSHA's guidance does focus a lot on protected unvaccinated workers or workers that may otherwise be at risk. And you know, it kind of defines at-risk workers as workers that have some kind of immunocondition that makes them more susceptible, essentially, to the disease. You know, we all know that COVID-19 is very, very contagious, and it's something that employers and everybody needs to be paying attention to. And the guidance really just talks about following the CDC guidelines. So making sure those employees that can't get vaccinated or, you know, are immunocompromised are wearing masks, they're, you know, distancing, they're taking advantage of any training, rooms are ventilated to the best of the ability of the facility or the workplace, practicing good hygiene, washing hands, don't touch your nose, cover your mouth. A lot of the things that you can find on CDC's guidelines. So, you know, there are a lot of points we've really been learning and hearing about for months now, almost more than a year, honestly, that's in this COVID guidance, you know, allowing employees to get time off to get vaccinated. Instructing any workers that are infected to stay home and to let them know if they were in close contact with somebody. Let unvaccinated workers that may have been in close contact with somebody that tested positive become aware of that. Make sure you alert employees if they may have been exposed. You don't need to tell them who they were exposed to, but you know, might want to let them know that there's been exposure in the workplace and they should get tested. Employers are also recommended to implement physical distancing for unvaccinated workers and, you know, any at-risk workers in all the communal areas. Make sure you train your workers. Make sure that everything is in a language that they can understand. Just generally speaking, the same kind of things we've been hearing about now for months. So the guidance, you should definitely check it out. If you, you know, Google OSHA, protecting workers, guidance on mitigating and preventing the spread of COVID-19 in the workplace, you will find the link. And it is something that is important. And especially those of you that may not have looked at it in a while, maybe you've forgotten some things. You know, I know I've spoken about it before. You know, there are workers that are protected and must be offered an accommodation. Anybody that has a disability needs to be accommodated. There may be certain individuals that cannot receive a vaccine because of a disability, or maybe they can't receive a certain vaccine. And there may also be individuals who, because of their religious beliefs, aren't able to, you know, maybe take a certain vaccine or any vaccine, depending upon the circumstances. And finally, you know, a group that, you know, may not, you know, nursing mothers, they have protections under the law, and you know, they should be treated the same as anybody that is disabled. But, you know, there has been at least, you know, one case I'm aware of where there was a situation where an employee was fired. I don't know if there was actually a lawsuit. There was a woman who wanted to become pregnant. And, you know, it wasn't clear at the time whether or not she had infertility issues, which may be a disability under the ADA and may require possibly some kind of accommodation. You know, it wasn't clear at this point if she had any kind of disability, but I would, you know, recommend that any employer work with your employees. If somebody has concerns about, you know, they're trying to get pregnant and they're a little unsure about what the cause and what the effect may be on their, you know, preborn child, work with them. It's okay to make certain exceptions in certain circumstances. You just need to have valid reasons for making those exceptions. And you should, you know, work with your employees, talk with your employees, and do the best you can. Now, with that being said, you know, there have been a lot of cases around medical workers refusing the vaccine. And, you know, there's been at least one case where medical workers at a hospital were terminated and the court ruled that the termination was valid. the employer could require vaccines. And because these medical workers have refused the vaccine, the employer was allowed to terminate them. And, you know, they weren't protected under the law. Now, these employees did not have a disability. They weren't requesting a religious accommodation, nothing like that. They were, you know, as far as I'm aware, simply hesitant to get the vaccine. And the workplace did require the vaccine. And the government has stated that you can require the vaccine. That's been under the EEOC guidelines for months and months and months now, I think, you know, since vaccines started coming around back in probably around December, maybe even a little bit further back when there was still, you know, something that wasn't quite within the world of what we thought would be possible. I mean, we've gotten these vaccines out pretty quickly. So it is an evolving situation. And if you are going to make a decision like that, you should consult with your employment counsel, because it's something you don't want to take lightly. And there are obviously some other risks. And I think I've talked about those in a prior podcast. And now that we've talked about these guidance, we're going to move on and talk about the emergency standard that OSHA has issued, the COVID-19 emergency standard for medical workers. And with that, we're going to move on to the second part of this podcast. Welcome back to the third part of this podcast. And in this part, I'm going to be talking about the emergency temporary standard. We're going to be talking about whether or not, you know, it's something you need to follow. As you're probably aware, the standard does not apply, surprisingly, to all workplaces. It only applies to certain workplaces. And essentially, it applies to workers in either employers, implies to settings where employees provide healthcare or healthcare support services. So it applies to services where employees provide healthcare or healthcare support services. So, you know, OSHA has released a very handy fact sheet that can help you determine whether or not your workplace is covered under the standard. So I'm going to go through that worksheet because I think it's helpful, and I think it's something that's useful, and I think it's something that employers can really benefit from. So before I do that, though, I need to kind of go through some of these definitions. So I need to define what is healthcare support services, and what's the difference? So healthcare services under the regulations, so we're looking under 1910.502 is the particular provision that we're going to look under. So healthcare services means services provided to individuals by professional healthcare practitioners, doctors, nurses, emergency medical personnel, oral health professionals, for the purpose of promoting, maintaining, monitoring, or restoring health. It's going to include a lot of different services, such as hospitalization, long-term care, ambulatory care, home health, hospice care, emergency medical response, patient transport. And for the purposes of the law, it does include autopsies. The law also applies to healthcare support services. And healthcare support services are going to be things like patient intake, admission, patient food services, equipment and facility maintenance, housekeeping services, healthcare laundry services, medical waste handling services, and medical equipment cleaning and reprocessing services. So if you are in within one of those two different categories, it's most likely going to apply to you. But I do want to go through this handy dandy flow chart that's been provided by OSHA to help employers determine whether or not they fit that definition. So if you are on OSHA's website, you're going to be looking for, is your workplace covered by the COVID-19 healthcare ETS? That's the name of the fact sheet. And so the fact sheet goes through several questions. Is the workplace a setting where any employee provides healthcare services or healthcare support services? You know, if it's yes, move on down the flowchart. If it's no, you don't need to follow these rules. Is the workplace a place that meets all of the following conditions? Is it in a non-hospital ambulatory care setting? Are all non-employees screened prior to entry? Are people suspected with or confirmed COVID-19 not permitted to enter? If yes, then the emergency standard applies to all portions of the hospital workplaces that are not well-defined hospital ambulatory care settings where all employees are vaccinated and all non-employees are screened prior to entry and people suspected or confirmed with COVID-19 are not permitted to enter. If you answer no to that question, so it doesn't meet all those conditions, all non-employees are not screened prior to entry, then does a portion of the workplace meet all the following conditions? It's a well-defined hospital ambulatory care setting. All employees are fully vaccinated and all non-employees are screened prior to entry. So if a portion of it meets it, then as I said before, the ETS is going to apply to those portions that are not well-defined hospital ambulatory settings. So if you answer no to that, you're going to move on down. And the next question is going to be, is the workplace a home health care setting that meets all of the following conditions? Because this does apply to home health care settings. All employees are fully vaccinated. All non-employees are screened prior to entry and people with suspected or confirmed COVID-19 are not present. So if yes, you move up to that same exception I've been talking about. If no, you move on down. And the question then becomes, are there well-defined areas of the workplace where there is no reasonable expectation that any person with suspected or confirmed COVID-19 will be present? So are there well-defined areas where there is no reasonable expectation that any person with COVID-19, either confirmed or suspected, will be present? If no, then the emergency temporary standard applies in full to the workplace, assuming that there's no other exception that applies. So some of the exceptions being, it does not apply to the provision of first aid by an employee who is not a licensed healthcare provider, the dispensing of prescriptions by a pharmacist in retail settings, healthcare support services not performed in a healthcare setting, off-site laundry, off-site medical billing, telehealth services performed outside of a setting where direct patient care occurs. Furthermore, a healthcare setting is embedded within a non-healthcare setting. Where a healthcare setting is embedded in a non-healthcare setting, a medical clinic and a manufacturing facility, a walk-in clinic and a retail setting, the ETS applies only to the embedded healthcare setting. So if you have a Walmart that has a walk-in clinic, it's only going to apply to the walk-in clinic. Finally, where emergency responders or other licensed healthcare providers enter a non-healthcare setting to provide healthcare services, the ETS only applies to the provision of the healthcare services by that employee. Again, the ambulance gets called to the Walmart. It's going to apply to those ambulance emergency medical professionals, the EMTs that are walking into that facility to provide that care, walking into the Walmart. So if you answer yes to the question, and you go back to the question, are there well-defined areas of the workplace where there is no reasonable expectation that any person with suspected or confirmed COVID-19 be present, then the ETS is going to apply in full to all other employees in these well-defined areas, as well to all employees, including those who are fully vaccinated in other areas of the workplace, assuming no other exception applies. So generally, the important thing to remember is that if you are in the business of providing healthcare services, or if you're in the business of providing healthcare support services and you're on site, embedded in the hospital, you're going to have to follow these rules. And, just in case I didn't mention it, ambulatory care means healthcare services performed on an outpatient basis without admission to a hospital or other facility, but does not include home healthcare settings for the purposes of the emergency temporary standard. So non-employee for the purpose of the relevant exceptions, any employee is not an employee of the employer, owns or controls the setting. Contractors working on the HVAC systems. So that would be another, thing to pay attention to. And, fully vaccinated, as we all come to understand, means you have had 2 weeks or more after the final dose of your COVID-19 vaccine. So that is the helpful guide to determine whether or not, OSHA applies. Now, they've issued a lot of other guidance. They've issued a really nice fact sheet. And I'm just going to kind of go through the fact sheet because I think it touches the main points that I really want to cover within this podcast. As I probably should mention, there is a lot of information here. And if you are a healthcare facility and you haven't gone through it yet, It is very important that you review the information. It's very important that you, you know, go through all the parts of the standard so that you are aware of, you're aware of what you need to do under the requirements, under the law. There's a lot of information within the fact sheet. And I really just want to go through the fact sheet because I don't want to go through the entire standard. There is a lot of information, a lot of good information on the website, and a lot of, you know, useful guidance about whether or not you've taken certain measures where possible. So there's this great checklist that OSHA's put out called the COVID-19 Healthcare Worksite Checklist and Employee Job Hazard Analysis. And it is a checklist where you can go through and see if you've done everything that you need to do to make sure that you are protecting your employees, essentially. So there's a lot of very important steps in here. And I'm just going to highlight a couple of them, but I don't want to go through this entire checklist because it's 11 pages long. And if I were to talk about 11 pages worth of information, I'm pretty sure anybody still listening at this point would, you know, fall asleep. So I want to highlight some of the most important parts. So in that fact sheet, in that checklist, rather, the checklist, do you have a COVID-19 plan that was developed in consultation with non-managerial employees? You need to work with other employees besides your members of management to develop that plan. Have you shared your COVID-19 plan with all other employers at your work site and coordinated to ensure that all workers are protected? Are you working with other people to make sure everybody is following the rules? You know, do you have a policy to screen and triage all clients, patients, residents, delivery people, visitors, and all other non-employees entering settings where direct patient care is provided? Do you have a log for recording all employee instances of COVID-19? Do you have a health screening protocol for screening all employees before each workday in each shift? Do you have a policy for employee COVID-19 testing? You know, then there's an element about physical distancing in the workplace, and there's a bunch of requirements about that. Ventilation in the workplace, all about your HVAC system and all the ventilation that you should have. Cleaning and disinfecting your workplace. That's another section of this checklist that you should review for your particular workplace. A section on PPE, personal protective equipment. Do you have enough face masks? Do the employees wear the face masks when they're indoors, occupying a vehicle with other people for work? Unless one of the exceptions applies to the ETS, the Emergency Temporary Standard. There's a section on fixed work, location, and job task inventory for employees outside of direct patient care areas who can't maintain physical distancing. There's another part of that checklist to fill out. Job task inventory for employees with potential exposure for a person with suspected or confirmed case of COVID-19. Employee job hazard analysis. So there's a job hazard analysis for employers to fill out. And it's basically to help your employers know what's going on. And again, at least one non-managerial employee should provide input on the job hazard analysis. So it's important to make sure you're doing that as well. Implementing a COVID-19 training program. And again, you know, even if you are not a medical workplace where this rule is going to apply to, there's some really important things that, you know, is helpful here. So training employees is always a good idea, training them on how COVID-19 is transmitted, the importance of hand hygiene, the benefits that you're maybe offering to get the vaccine, the encouragement, what your plan is for the vaccine, what an employee does if they are positive. So this checklist is something that you should really check out if you haven't done so already. And I know, you know, these rules have been in effect just, you know, for a short period of time and some questions remain. But there's a lot of great information here and a lot of things you can learn. So moving on to the fact sheet. The fact sheet, I think, contains the essence, and I want to go through it bit by bit, of the COVID-19 Emergency Temporary Standard. So it is fact sheet subpart U, COVID-19 Healthcare ETS. That's the name of the document. So, you know, we're going to kind of skip around here. We've kind of talked about some of these, so I don't want to get into everything. There were a few different sections of the Emergency Temporary Standard that were, you know, most relevant within this fact sheet. There is, and we're just looking at that, you know, fact sheet U. I'm not going to talk about the mini respiratory protection program, Emergency Temporary Standard, in a whole lot of detail. just because it is a lot more back specific, and I want to focus more on the other fact sheet because I think it is a little bit more interesting for most workplaces. So the ETS is aimed at protecting workers facing, you know, COVID-19 hazards, one of the most high at risk places, you know, patient care. You know, patients may be not wearing masks. They may have to take those masks off. You may be in close contact with them. They may be positive for COVID. And, you know, we talked about whether or not your facility is going to apply, whether it's not going to apply to your facility. And, you know, these rules have just taken effect at this time. So I'm not going to get into some of that information. I'll just highlight what the fact sheet said. Employers have to comply with most provisions within 14 days, and with the provision involving physical barriers, ventilation, and training within 30 days. So you have 30 days, you had 30 days to engage in training for your employees, physical barriers, and improve ventilation. So OSHA is, you know, going to use this enforcement discretion for employers who are making a good faith effort to comply with this ETS. So it's very important that you're making your best effort to comply, even if it's not possible to fully comply right away, or if you're struggling with certain elements of it, you should work towards full compliance, but it's understandable if you're not able to get there yet. And so long as you're making a good faith effort, and truly a good faith effort, OSHA is going to give some leeway. So the key requirements of the Emergency Temporary Standard are a COVID-19 plan. Every workplace that this applies to has to develop and implement a COVID-19 plan in writing if you have more than 10 employees. And that's going to have to include a designated safety coordinator, somebody that's going to, you know, be able to speak with authority, ensure compliance with these with the rules of the workplace. A workplace-specific hazard assessment. You need to assess your workplace. What are the hazards within your particular workplace? You know, every kind of treatment's different. You need to, you know, make an assessment of your particular workplace. Involvement of non-managerial employees in the hazard assessment. So you actually need to talk to your employees and say, hey, what do you think? Does this make sense? You need to have at least some involvement. And you know, if you go through that checklist, you'll see in some places it may say one employee. I would recommend getting, you know, obviously more feedback is better, and getting feedback from a variety of employees with a variety of duties is best to best understand what you need to do in your workplace. Policy, you need to have policies and procedures to minimize the risk of transmission of COVID-19. And hopefully you've been doing this whole time, but now it is required for healthcare workplaces. Patient screening and management. You need to have screening and management of patients. So you need to limit and monitor points of entry to settings where direct care is provided. Screen and triage patients. Clients and other visitors and non-employees. So, you know, going into the hospital, some, you know, I've been through a couple recently. There are certain entryways that employees are allowed to go in, that non-employees, excuse me, visitors are allowed to go into. You know, if you've gone to a hospital, maybe it's for your regular checkup, maybe it's for something else. There may have been areas that have been blocked off where you weren't able just to go walk in. That's because they're trying to, you know, limit and monitor those points of entry and, you know, make sure that patients are screened before they go into the facility, before they go into the hospital. So, you know, if you go to the hospital, maybe you have your regular checkup, maybe you have something else going on, having a baby, whatever it might be, you may notice that there are less ways to get in the hospital. And that's because of this rule that's going on. Standard transmission-based precautions, you know, policies and procedures to adhere to the standard transmission guidelines from CDC. Again, a lot of this relates back to the CDC guidelines. Personal protective equipment, everybody's wearing a face mask when they're indoors, occupying a vehicle with other people for work purposes, and provide and ensure that employees use respirators and other PPE for exposure to employees, people with a suspected or confirmed case of COVID-19. And then there's an aerosol generating procedures on a person with COVID-19, suspected or confirmed COVID-19. Limit employees to only those who are essential to perform the procedures in an airborne infection isolation room. If available, clean and disinfect the surfaces. So you're taking all these precautions for any procedure that's going to generate aerosol, generate droplets. Physical distancing, keep 6 feet apart. Physical barriers, install cleanable, physical, disposable, or disposable solid barriers at fixed work locations in non-patient carriers where employees are not separated from other people by at least 6 feet. Clean and disinfect. So, you know, you're following those cleaning protocols, disinfecting all areas at least once a day, and providing an alcohol hand rub that is at least 60% alcohol or readily accessible hand washing facilities for, you know, employees, following the standard practices for cleaning disinfection as well. Ventilation. Ensure that employer-owned controlling existing HVAC systems are used in accordance with the manufacturer's instructions and design specifications for the systems. So you're using those air filter systems. Healthcare screening and medical management. Screen employees before each workday. Require each employee to promptly notify the employer when the employee is COVID-19 positive, suspected of COVID-19, or experiencing certain symptoms. Notify employees within 24 hours when an employee who has been in the workplace is COVID-19 positive. Follow requirements for removing employees from the workplace. And employers with more than 10 employees provide medical removal protection benefits in accordance with the standard. So there's a lot of things that you have to do. If you have somebody that has, if you're in one of these workplaces, that you need to follow these requirements. Vaccination, provide reasonable time and paid leave. They require you to provide paid leave for vaccinations and vaccination side effects. So some of you may be familiar with the FFCRA, which, you know, was not renewed, but it was around last year. That required, you know, certain time off. Now, under this emergency standard, you are required, if you are one of these healthcare facilities, to provide time off, and not just time off, but paid leave for vaccinations and vaccine side effects. Training. You need to ensure all employees receive training so they comprehend COVID-19 transmission, tasks and situations of the workplace that could result in infection, the relevant policies and procedures as well. Anti-retaliation, inform employees of the rights to the protections required by the standards, and you will not discharge or in any manner discriminate against employees for exercising their rights under the standards. So there is essentially a whistleblowing or anti-retaliation, I really should say, not a whistleblowing, anti-retaliation provision. So if somebody is retaliated against because they, you know, they refuse to maybe do one of these things, or they are exercising their rights under the emergency temporary standard, like taking paid leave to get a vaccination, you cannot retaliate against them. Record keeping. You also finally need to establish a COVID-19 log. Again, if you have 10 or more employees, of all employee instances of COVID-19 without regard to occupational exposure, and follow the requirements for making records available to employees and representatives. So that's the basics of the emergency temporary standard. You know, I'm going to talk briefly in the next segment about the other fact sheet, the mini respiratory protection program. And just, it's going to go through the fact sheet. There is a lot of information. These standards are really worth checking out if you are a healthcare facility. I just want to give the broad overview so you can get an idea. If you work in a healthcare facility, if you're a nurse, if you're curious about the vaccine, if you're curious, maybe trying to look at what you can do for your own facility, if you're not a healthcare facility, the emergency temporary standard has a lot of useful information that can help. You can essentially use as guidance for your workplace. And with that, we're going to move on to the last section. All right, welcome back to the final part of this podcast. So we're going to be talking about the Mini Respiratory Protection Program, and I'm just going to close it out at the end after we discuss that, because I think it's going to be pretty quick. So the Mini Respiratory Protection Program was a part of the Emergency Temporary Standard, but it only applies to specific circumstances under the Emergency Temporary Standard. And again, OSHA's released a really great fact sheet called the Mini Respiratory Protection Program, which I'm basically going to go through, kind of provide some commentary on. And, you know, that's going to hopefully be helpful to you all as something that you know you can use and look at to understand what kind of other requirements you might have at your workplace. So it only applies generally when workers are not exposed to suspected or confirmed cases of COVID-19, but where respirator use could offer worker enhanced protection. So if there is a place where maybe you could be better protected by respirator, that's where it's going to apply. The mini respiratory protection program does not replace or substitute the normal respiratory protection standard, which is 29 CFR 1910-134, you know, which is a little bit different. So OSHA's normatory respiratory protection standard applies to, you know, circumstances under the emergency temporary standard where workers are exposed to suspected or confirmed cases of COVID-19 or any workplace hazards that may require respiratory protection. You know, the silica rule is one of the big ones that people talked about before. Why did they decide to do this? You know, it's basically designed to improve workplace safety. So that's one of the reasons why they implemented it. And it was just basically easier to implement it with the rule. So the mini respiratory program only applies to specific provisions of the emergency temporary standard. And that's going to be listed in table 2 of this fact sheet that I'm working through with you here. So the standard is going to apply under table 2. The mini respiratory protection program only applies to respirator use covered by specific sections of the ETS, table 2. We're looking at table 2. The normal respiratory protection standard is applicable to all other respirator use required under the ETS and to hazards not covered by the ETS that we talked about before, when you need for which you need respiratory protection, like the silica rule. So the mini respirator rule is going to apply in place of face mask when a respirator is not required. So 1910.502F4. That's when you're going to follow this rule. So what do employers need to do when workers provide their own respirators? If they provide their own respirators, the employer first has to provide workers with specific notice, and the notice intended to inform workers to take certain precautions to be sure that the respirator itself is not hazardous. And, you know, there's a couple other subsections here about the rule. What do employers need to do when they provide respirators to workers? You need to provide specific training, ensure that the user seal checks are conducted for tight-fitting respirators and that you correct any problems, and ensure that if respirators are being reused, they are reused properly, and discontinue respirator reuse under certain circumstances. There are certain circumstances within this rule that you may want to look at when you need to, you know, discontinue the use of certain respirators. And just in case somebody's not aware, a user seal check is a quick and easy way for workers to verify they put on the respirators correctly and that the respirators are properly sealed to the face. So that's something that, you know, is important with, along with this mini respirator rule. Come right back with the conclusion of this episode. And that concludes this episode of Employment Law Problems. I want to remind you again, this podcast is not legal advice. If you need legal advice, you should go to your lawyer. But I really hope you've learned a little bit about the emergency rule, and I hope you've learned a little about the guidance for COVID-19 that's been put out. You know, I'm curious to see what happens with this new Delta variant. My understanding, and again, it's all very new, but my understanding is that these symptoms for the Delta variant may not be different. It's something that's very new. It's something that's kind of being explored. It's something that could cause these rules to change. There's some speculation that the Delta variant of COVID-19 has slightly different symptoms. And so it may be important for them to go back and revise certain parts of the CDC guidelines that we've been referring to so that you can be on the lookout for those symptoms as well. And it's possible that workplaces, this rule may change again, standards may change again if they find it's more infectious, even for people that have been vaccinated. There may be additional precautions that are recommended. You know, we may see some of the guidance change regarding when employees should be masked. As I said before, Israel had relaxed standard previously about, you know, workplace masks and things, and that guidance was rescinded because of the Delta variant that was spreading in Israel. So they've started to reinstitute the mask mandate. So it's something we could definitely see happen here. But I hope that you've learned a little bit in this podcast. I hope that you are paying attention to these changes in the workplace, paying attention to all the changing standards, all the changing rules. And if you are a healthcare workplace, I really hope this was informative for you and you've learned a little bit about what you should do within your workplace. And that concludes this episode. Thanks very much for listening, and I hope to catch you the next time.